How did the news hit you when you found out that Ted Stevens was indicted? It's almost as if the word senator is part of his name. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel.
And I'm Michael Carey. Many Alaskans rallied around our senior senator, and he could very well still win the primary. Then comes the trial. Can we picture an Alaska without Senator Ted Stevens? The phone lines are open at 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, that's a local call at 550-8422.
Ted Stevens' legacy on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska.
Well, Michael, it's good to have you with us here on the show today.
Thank you.
Also with us is Terrence Cole, professor of history at University of Alaska Fairbanks. Welcome to the show, Terrence.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Michael.
Both of you are history buffs, so it'll be good to have you here. But it's really a show for the listeners to talk about how they feel, because all we heard was that first reaction. You know, every news organization sent microphones out in the street, and what they heard over and over again is sad day. And tragic. And tragic is an interesting concept, I think, because the definition of a tragedy is when the audience knows something that the person involved in the tragedy does not. In other words, the audience watches someone have an inevitable fate befall them that only the audience knows is inevitable. And in a sense, maybe we see that with Ted Stevens, where he would be the last one to realize that they were really closing in on him. That he had gotten himself in a position where he was taking favors from people maybe he shouldn't have been taking them from. So tragic. What do you think, Michael?
I think that it's really a matter of Senator Stevens' long career and his contribution to Alaska. As I've said before, I guess it's a sin to quote yourself, but briefly, Ted Stevens has been in public life so long that I was 8 years old when he was named the prosecutor in Fairbanks in 1953. And I'm now getting Social Security, and he's still in public life as a United States senator. He's had a long and distinguished career, even those who disagree with him would admit. I mean, clearly he's made some enemies over the years, but most people have, if they have any sense of history, have a broad appreciation of his role in our life for more than half a century.
And over again, I don't think anyone would dispute that he's gone to bat for Alaskans. And it's awful hard to picture Alaska without Ted Stevens going to bat for us. The most recent one I think of was the ID cards for getting across the border. Without him just fighting and nagging those bureaucrats, I'm just not sure we would have got to the ID cards. Everybody would have had to get passports, and it's just as simple as that. The one he may never get to is telework. We have all these federal workers in Alaska and the GSA. The last thing they want to do is let them work at home. Ted Stevens is the one putting the pressure on. Without him there, I don't know if anybody will. And I know you can go back over the years and repeat that story over and over and over again. And that's why it's good to have a couple of people with some historical knowledge here with me on the program. And also to help our listeners through this, to talk about, how this makes them feel. What is the legacy here? Terrence Cole, is it your feeling that Ted Stevens has enriched himself at the public expense?
I don't think that's true at all. I mean, in fact, one of the things that's sort of supremely ironic about this is that of the extremely wealthy men in the United States Senate, I mean, I really don't know where Ted ranks, but this is a guy who has not... has not done that, especially when you consider that I don't know how much money has passed through his hands since he's been on the Appropriations Committee for now forever. It's stunning. But let me go back to what you said, though, Steve, about what it's meant having him on the to bat for Alaska. During the statehood battle, in one of the hearings, Bob Atwood was asked at the time, then publisher of the Anchorage Times and really the most prominent, most vocal newspaper publisher in favor of statehood, was asked, well, what difference would it make being a state? And they referred to the fact, well, you know, it was wonderful having Bob Bartlett, who was our delegate to Congress and well-liked and respected. It was wonderful having him go to bat for Alaska because he was really admired by his colleagues back in the Congress, both in the House and Senate. But Atwood said, you know, if we were a state, we'd have a senator, and we'd have a senator who could come in and bang his fist on the table, and then that would make all the difference. Well, you know, people really don't understand how powerless Alaska was as a territory and how what the situation that we'd be in we've grown so accustomed to somebody who had the ability to pound on the table and get people to listen. Back in the 1950s, one of the things that people were most mad about in Alaska was the McCarran Act, talking about the passport issue. That was the immigration restriction bill put out in the early 1950s. That was the one that required Alaskans to show their passports when they went to Seattle and during territorial days. And it was one of the things that people cited most often in the statehood battle, that they wanted that the McCarran Act restrictions lifted. And, of course, that wasn't going to happen just with Delegate Bob Bartlett.
Yeah, going back to that time, we were kind of in the Red Scare still. So I guess that was one of the reasons why that act existed. And if they could, these people from this territory, you know, might be a little suspect, kind of like the Japanese were that they interned on the West Coast.
One of the people who was suspect was me, because I got questioned and I was 9 years old or something like that.
Where's your passport?
They were on to me already then, I guess you could say.
You know, they knew something then, Michael. Yeah. But, you know, and remember Atwood at the time, just to say that, he urged everybody, you didn't actually have to show a passport. You had to show, I can't remember now all the details of it. But
it was some kind of proof of citizenship.
Proof of citizenship. And Atwood said he would show his garbage card or something that he had got from Anchorage or something. So, but that one act, it was now we've become accustomed to this post 9/11 world about needing a passport for a lot of things now, so it doesn't quite resonate the same about going south, but that's just one example. I think that we are going to be in whatever happens, life without Ted Stevens will be dramatically different for Alaskans. They have no idea, really, of how, because they've completely become accustomed to it, actually. Whether people are supporters of him or detractors, they have become accustomed to what he has done for the state.
Steve, could I give one example of how long Ted Stevens has been around? I was very curious to look for the first reference to Theodore Fulton Stevens, Ted Stevens, in the New York Times. And as far as I can tell, it's from 1960, and it's very brief. The headline is Truth Squad Grounded, and the dateline is Jamestown, New York. A Republican truth squad was grounded today on its way to Pittsburgh to reply to a speech tonight by the Democratic presidential candidate, John F. Kennedy. Senator Norris Cotton of New Hampshire, Representative Donald L. Jackson, and Theodore of California, and Theodore Stevens, a solicitor with the Interior Department, left by car for Pittsburgh. That's in 1960. Ted was trying to get Richard Nixon elected, and that'll give you some perspective, because I assume most of our audience wasn't born at that time.
I was graduating high school.
Well, and one thing, Michael and Steve, Dermot, my brother, pointed this out to me, you know, in the Juno Empire headline of the first edition of the Juno Empire after statehood, and I think it was like January 8th was the edition, 1959. This is the one that where it says we dude it, and Michael's pointed out, I think rightly, that was stolen. Basically, they took it from the either the New York Daily News or the New York Post, maybe a headline about
the Daily News.
Dodgers. Yeah. Daily News, yeah.
The Dodgers finally won the World Series.
That's right, yeah. So it's the We Dood at D-O-O-D, you know, and it's ironic, of course, because the Empire was the most bitter anti-statehood newspaper in Alaska.
The most anti-Duda.
The Anchorage Daily News, the other right bastion of reactionary, the mouthpiece of the interest. But anyway, in that issue, on the front page, there's also a story about Ted Stevens getting promoted by Fred Seaton to a new job back at the Interior Department. So from that date, from the very first day of Alaska as a state, the story was something like, you know, Theodore Stevens gets a new position, a new promotion. So he's been a public figure in the headlines from the very beginning.
Yeah, he put a special plaque on his office door in the Interior Department, you know, Alaska office.
Do we have a caller, Steve, or should I go ahead and tell one story?
We have a caller, and I think we'll go ahead and go to Martha in Anchorage and come running back here. This is an extraordinary program. I mean, and it's an extraordinary event, and we don't really, you know, my guests are more experts than I am, but we're all kind of feeling our way through this because this is history in the process. Senator Ted Stevens is up for re-election. He's running in the primary. I think he's still running ahead in the polls in the primary. We had one of his primary opponents on the program last week as the indictment was coming down. And this time here we're talking about a guy that is out there campaigning. And he's invited to a future talk of Alaska in 2 weeks. He's booked in here. His campaign is still expecting him to come, so we may hear from the senator himself. And indeed, he's welcome to call us here on the program if he's listening
he
right
can
now.
Correct my errors.
Would be fine because it's very odd to be talking about somebody almost as if they weren't there or as if they somehow belong to the past when he very much does not belong to the past. He belongs to the past, the present, and the future we don't know.
And Steve, you know, I would think that one thing that his career demonstrate, or that human tenacity demonstrates, it's a big mistake to count people out too prematurely. And you know, I think of one thing that you know, it's and he'd probably hate me for making this comparison, but I think there is a perhaps something of this of the Clintons and the Whitewater investigations. And, you know, and even Clinton getting impeached. I mean, the worst thing that ever happened to the Republicans was backing Bill Clinton into a corner every time they got snookered. Now he was the greatest campaigner as a president, maybe in American history, Bill Clinton, whether you liked him or love him. He's incredible that this guy from Arkansas got elected president twice. But I think it's a highly premature for people to count Ted Stevens out, to write his political obituary just yet.
Yeah, and that's not what we're here to do. What we're here to do is to let Alaskans talk through this for an hour from all over the state and what their perspectives are on it, whether it's conspiracy theories or a feeling of being lost and bereft, which, you know, kind of hit me. What are we going to do without them? You know, let's go to Martha now. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Martha.
Hi, good morning. I guess this is as good a time as any to say that Alaska is a new state still, and we still have lessons to learn. And one of them might be the old maxim not to name a building or a structure or infrastructure after a person until they're dead.
Well, you got a really good point there. And then you got things that haven't even been built yet, like Don Young Way, for instance.
Yes. So that's one lesson we can learn, or that we should have learned and should have applied to today. And good morning, Michael Carey.
Good morning, Martha. It's nice to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you. And I also wanted to mention the Uncle Ted. I believe I'm the person who nicknamed him Uncle Ted.
Oh, wow.
I do have uncles who in the Native culture have a very strong role in my life, or have had a strong role in my life. And I named him Uncle Ted in a public forum. That was the Fourth Avenue Theater several years ago during the Alaska Intertribal Council, and I evoked the uncle tag because I felt as if he was very paternalistic to Alaska Natives, and he has. We've turned into a special interest group with our corporations, and Ted is a master at connecting up special interest groups with money sources. So, or, for example, turning a special interest group into a no-bid contractor with the federal government to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. So I wanted to mention, for the people who have misunderstood the Uncle Ted label, I didn't use it fondly. I used it not derisively, but partly in a joking manner.
Martha, some of those very people you mentioned are holding a big fundraiser today at the Captain Cook to express their solidity and loyalty to Ted Stevens. It's a list of the ones I saw of who were sponsoring it was top Native corporate leaders.
Well, as Native corporations, as special interest groups, not even Native corporations, we have done handsomely with Ted Stevens in office. And we have cost the federal treasury hundreds of millions of dollars. And just as an aside, Ted Stevens' kids, it has been said in the statewide newspaper, Ted Stevens' kids call the former chairman of our corporation Uncle Ollie. So I'm wondering if the Federal Bureau of Investigation has done any investigating beyond VCO.
Well, so, there's three grand juries working, so it's kind of hard to tell, Martha. I mean, it seems like there's more to come.
And then one other thought for everyone who is weighing in. Ted Stevens is first and foremost an attorney, and that's where he started to make his name. And when he says that read the rules, perhaps he should have refreshed his own memory on reading the rules. He helped write them, and I think where he may be vulnerable will be with the family connections. What he might not have done for himself, he would do for his family, and that might be what helps bring him. If he does get brought down, that will be, I think, part of the equation. So I just wanted to mention that, and the journalist who picked up on the Uncle Ted tag was Steve Johnson, who at the time was working for the National Native News, and he put that on put an excerpt of my floor speech on public radio. So that's what I wanted to mention, and let's not forget whatever our opinion of Ted Stevens. He is entitled to the most basic tenet of American jurisprudence, which is we're all innocent until we're proven guilty.
Yep. The word knowingly does appear in his statement there.
Can I mention something real quickly, Steve? And that is people should remember Ted Stevens understands the prosecutorial process very well. He was a prosecutor himself in Fairbanks from 1953 to 1956. Fairbanks was a very rough place. He was involved in some very high-profile cases right from the beginning of his career, and he was a very aggressive, opinionated, I think, and intense prosecutor who got into many, many battles with the defense bar. I don't think that would surprise our listeners, but it should be noted that he understands what prosecutors do and what they can do, and especially what it means to indict somebody.
Martha, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Terrence, anything you want to chime in on here?
Well, I think that the idea that it's a little bit even about calling him Uncle Ted, one of the ironic things, and Michael knows this, but the men who I'm working on in a book is C.W. Snedden, who really is Ted Stevens' sort of very... good
his Uncle Ted,
and father figure, yeah. But Snedden, who and Stevens has said this, and I think it's true. He really was closer to him than any person. He really was his mentor in Alaska, and he was the publisher of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, for those who don't know at the time. But the bond between Snedden and Stevens was then also further. Enriched and deepened with the bond with Secretary of Interior Fred Seaton, and who became then the three of them really sort of a triumvirate in a way of fighting for statehood at the time. This is in 1957 to 1960. But anyway, they called each other Uncle Fred and Uncle Bill. And I don't know. I don't think they called because Ted was younger than either C.W. Snedden or Fred Seaton. But anyway, so that was very common back in 1958, is they were referring to each other that way. Seaton, they all called him Uncle Fred.
Yeah, so, and Seaton was a critical figure in statehood, as near as I can tell. I mean, the political forces may have been aligning to the point where statehood would come at a certain point, but during the Eisenhower administration, the fact that he became the Interior Secretary and was so close with Snedden was light years away from his predecessor, who was adamantly opposed to statehood, largely on partisan grounds. Whereas Eisenhower was also opposed to statehood, and as I understand, it had to do with his feeling that because of the Second World War and the military activity here, it was necessary as a strategic location. But basically, Seaton kind of talked him into it.
And, you know, it's pretty clear, you know, Eisenhower, I think in our history we've sort of misinterpreted the sort of Democrats generally misinterpreted the Eisenhower administration opposition as just partisan. But in some material I've looked at, it's pretty clear to me that you know, many of the most partisan Republicans were furious with Eisenhower because he wasn't partisan enough. And you'll remember, and Markle knows, that, you know, Ike was nobody knew if he wasn't a Republican or a Democrat. Both parties wanted him to run for president in 1952. And actually, you know, they were interested in having him in 1948. What happened was that Eisenhower was convinced that Alaska was like the Philippines before World War II, and Ike had served in the Philippines with MacArthur, and he thought it was a neglected province, and so his focus was all on defense needs. And the reason that Ted Stevens, his importance, I think, in this is that the man who worked out who changed the Eisenhower's position, the Eisenhower administration's position, was Fred Seaton. But the person who actually crafted the specific part of the Statehood Act, Section 10 of the Statehood Act, was Ted Stevens. And Section 10 is the Strategic Defense or National Defense Withdrawal Zone Initiative, which is still the law of the land. It was called the PIC line, Porcupine, Yukon, Kuskokwim line, and gave the president ability to withdraw territory at any time for any reason at any without justifying it to anyone north and west of the Porcupine, the Yukon, and the Kuskokwim. This has never been invoked, but it was that part of the Statehood Act, I believe anyway, that made Eisenhower buy off on the whole statehood concept. So that in a way was the most important piece of early legislation that Ted Stevens had a hand in crafting. I mean, long before he actually a decade before he returned as a senator to representing the state of Alaska.
Ted Stevens became a senator after running unsuccessfully and being appointed by Wally Hickel.
You want me to take that, Steve, or do we have another?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead, and then we'll go to Stevens' call.
Is he on the line?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we ought to let
not Ted, a different Steven.
Okay, I thought he could explain about running against Ernest
sure
Greening.
He would.
He ran against Ernest Greening twice, one in 1962, in which he won the nomination. And Ernest at that time was a legend. He'd been governor of Alaska from 1939 into the early 50s, involved in the statehood campaign and then gone to the Senate. And he lost. It was it wasn't a rout, but it was decisive in Greening's favor. And then he ran in 1968. Ted Stevens did again and lost to Elmer Rasmussen in the primary. Eventually, Greening himself lost to Mike Gravel. And 1968, 40 years ago, was the great earthquake, because Ted Stevens probably wondered, and friends of his have told me that this was one of the darkest periods of his life. And he's had several, what could be more tragic than losing your wife? But the period of, shall we say, August till December of 1968, he'd run for the Senate twice. He'd lost twice. What were his prospects? But then Bob Bartlett died, and Wally Hickel died on the same day that Wally Hickel was named Secretary of the Interior, and Wally Hickel named Ted Stevens to the U.S. Senate, and Ted Stevens knew how to run uphill. He knew what was expected of him.
Yeah, what a beginning.
It's a very dramatic story, and then 4 years later, Nick Begich, who'd gone into the House, disappeared in this terrible plane tragedy, and we had, you know, Don Young came into the House, which nobody expected.
Yes, and that was odd because Begich actually won the election even though he was dead.
Yes, and it was a couple of weeks before the election. That has happened before in the United States where they go ahead and conduct the election. There's really no way to change it. And actually, Begich had not been presumed dead. That did not happen till around New Year's. So legally, I guess speaking, he was still alive. And I believe it was like 53,000 to 41,000, something like that, that Begich won by. But that's for a whole other show.
All right. Well, we're talking about the historical picture of Ted Stevens here on Talk of Alaska today and seeing how Alaskans feel about it. We got lots of expertise with us, and the callers have their share as well. Here's Stephen, joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Stephen.
Yeah, good morning. This is Stephen Toffin of the Groundswell Fisheries Movement. Let me first comment that it's interesting, a lot of people have not discussed the fact that the IRS Criminal Investigation Division was on stage with the FBI when the prosecutor's spokesperson announced the indictment. And that's something people ought to give a lot of thought to when they deal with the issue of presumption of innocence, that legal fiction that the prosecutors can't prove their case, because it's obvious that there may be tax implications here and not just Senate misfilings. But the reason I called in today was it is going to be quite the challenge to sort out what Ted's legacy is, and there are a lot of legends. That's probably a good word to use. They're popularly accepted myths. And in fisheries, one of the great ones is that he somehow authored our nation's fishing law, but we know that the Fisheries Conservation and Management Act was crafted in the early 70s while Ted was at the Law of the Sea Conference and stuff. And Senator Magnuson of Washington State's name eventually went on that law out of respect for his pushing it through the Senate. I was at New England Fish Company at the time. We had the lobbyist for Earth Day, the Ed Ferrier, pushing that through with President Carter. And later on, Ted finally got his name on the act, so it's now called the Magnuson-Stevens Act. But in my realm on the Groundswell Fisheries Movement, we take on Ted and whether or not he's a legitimate spokesperson for U.S. fisheries. And we don't believe that he is. And so many other people had a role in that. And I hope that by the time this is all sorted out, that we do get an accurate description of his role in various pieces of legislation.
Stephen, let me ask you this. Do you think we'd have CDQs without Ted Stevens?
No, I don't believe we would have CDQs, and we also wouldn't have a branch economy of Japanese corporatism out in Dutch Harbor either. And this is one of the odd things. As people try to evaluate Ted and his earmarks, even though I'm a huge critic of Ted's, I will not criticize 95% of his dollar earmarks because I believe they were legitimate and any other senator could have gotten them. Well, I will yield to his exceptional skills, too. But what's really bothered us in fisheries is the language changes in bills where you don't actually see a dollar amount on them. And I'm the whistleblower who went to the IRS Criminal Investigation Division in Seattle, the one that you recently saw credited by the Department of Justice spokesperson for their efforts on Ted's case so far. And we went there on the missing $2 billion a year that these multinational corporations take out through accounting tricks. It's what's known as product laundering. They launder the profits across national borders through the products, and the IRS official term for it is transfer pricing. It's the largest tax and trade topic in the world. So we always have that unanswered question of what could someone else have done and would we have been better off without Ted? And in fisheries, I believe that in many ways we would have been.
Stephen, thank you so much for your very knowledgeable call.
You're welcome.
Just to make a point here, or attempt to make one, I think Ted Stevens would say, I've never picked all winners in every everything that I've intervened in. And he's had some hellacious battles with some of his constituents personally and collectively over very specific issues. That one in the fisheries is a very good example, and we heard it articulated there. There have been times when he's been very upset with some of his constituents, especially native constituents, about their views on opening ANWR. He may not have been quite as theatrical as Don Young in his criticism of some of the Gwich'in spokesmen, but I don't think that he would claim that I ran a system in which everybody won.
No, very much a pragmatist into getting results. And
Steve, one thing, let me jump in there. I think that I don't really know much about the fishing business, but one thing I think that we should point out, what a previous caller, a common phrase that we like to use is special interest. Well, everybody's a special interest. I mean, you know, people never see themselves as a special interest. Everybody else is always a special interest, and that, in fact, this is what a politician's job is. So in a way, it's a absolutely Orwellian, meaningless term, special interest, because every constituent is a special interest of one type or another.
And of course, Stevens himself would indulge in that type of labeling as saying extreme environmental groups.
one of the big special interests in Alaska that's greatly benefited is public radio. I mean, he's one of the champions of public
radio. It's actually a vital necessity, Terrence.
That's right. It's not a special interest.
It's a public utility, Terrence.
That's right. Yeah. So I think that the idea that his that he should be held responsible, you know, he shouldn't be held responsible for talk of Alaska. What some knuckleheads go on there and say, you know, I mean, just because he helps funding for public.
Yeah, you're a good
radio
point.
But maybe he should, Steve. Maybe we will look a little more carefully at you. But anyway, just to. Being serious, though, for a second, you know, the recent indictment and then conviction of our former mayor, Jim Hayes, here in Fairbanks and his wife, and it came about with these earmarks that had gone to the former mayor and his church. And the only thing is that I think it's a really fair, I think it's you know, what happened to the rest of the United States government? Why is it all Ted Stevens' responsibility when money is initially appropriated to these things? What happened to the rest of the government? I mean, it's not his responsibility. He's not in the executive branch. He doesn't carry stuff out. So I think that there's been sort of a general failure maybe back there of sort of the checks and balances. That probably is a fair statement, and that's not his fault if he's so effective that the balances are disappear.
Thanks, Terrence. Terrence Cole, a history professor, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Michael Carey, This is Michael Carey. I was going to make a couple of points here very briefly and then get out of the way so that our listeners can take over with some questions and comments. One thing I wanted to say is that apparently states have different political cultures, that they, in some ways, even though they're maybe in the same region, they're not quite the same. And Alaska seems to have been in Washington that we expect our delegation to get on the appropriation and legislate, that is, provide federal dollars for us here in Alaska to have many, many programs. Other states have different traditions. I talked to a professor at the University of Wisconsin who studied these matters, and he talked about his own state. They have a tradition that they want one senator, now is Herb Cole, to sort of take care of business, and they want another one to raise hell with the federal government in Washington and to try and shake things up. This is in the tradition of Bob La Follette and William Proxmire, and that person is Russ Feingold, who's on the Judiciary Committee. I think too often from the perspective of Alaskans, if you went on Judiciary or Foreign Relations, you'd be seen as a sucker because there's no money to be appropriated there. What we want is federal money and lower taxes, and I think we've made that clear. That doesn't, you know, that's not everybody's view, but that certainly is a view that's very pronounced in the way we have our expectations of our delegation.
And Terrence Cole, certainly in the past, it was very important for Alaska to get somebody on the Merchant Marine and Fisheries or Interior Committees.
Well, yeah, or in defense or just the you know, the variety of areas and say, and fisheries, for instance, with all the coastline and the biggest fishery in the world, and then the Bering Sea. I mean, you know, there's really sort of no end. But I'll tell you though, one of the things that it's getting a seat on the Appropriations Committee is such a treasured, I suppose, by anyone, because in fact, you know, like they always say, the mother's milk of politics, and that really is what the federal government has the power to do, is of steering money. I mean, that's the thing that where the power lies. But the one thing I was going to say, I was just going to was a quip in there with Michael, one of the Wisconsin senator who you know, are people stirring it up, is like La Follette and Joe McCarthy. You know,
oh, yeah. Joe McCarthy held Feingold's seat at one time.
Yeah, so you know they do have that reputation. So
let's go to Karen. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Karen.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. I was calling because, you know, yes, Ted Stevens has brought in a lot of money to Alaska, and I'm involved with the Special Olympics. My stepdaughter's involved in the Special Olympics. I'm a strong supporter of Special Olympics. And Ted Stevens got $10 million for the Special Olympics, which is thrilling and exciting. But what is really disturbing is the fact that, okay, the Anchorage Daily News said that Ben Stevens got $200,000 of that, and I've heard that Ben Stevens, in fact, got more than $700,000 of that $10 million. And that's where the problems lie.
Yeah, well, that's that has to do with an executive salary, I guess.
I think that this she raises an interesting point, and that is the damage that the activities, whether they've been described fairly or unfairly, but the activities that Ben Stevens has engaged in have, there's no question about it, affected Ted Stevens' reputation. I would say that Ben Stevens is the most unpopular person in Alaska public life. I'm not even sure who else is a candidate, unless it was Frank Murkowski.
But don't you think Daddy had something to do with Ben getting that $700,000?
But we don't know, and maybe overtly not. Maybe he didn't have to. I mean, maybe, you know, does he really have to call the shots for the shots to get called?
Well, I would say one thing, Steve, this is Terrence, to just jump in, that Karen raises a good question, but again, I'd say it's a little bit like the case here with the Mayor Hayes. I mean, it isn't fair to assume that he actually told anyone to do this. Now, you know, I don't have any knowledge of that at all. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But it's one of the breakdowns has been, like I said, the checks and balances of the system, that and that if he's became so powerful that it's not his fault if the rest of the system doesn't actually keep working. I mean, he wasn't supposed to evaluate the grants of the Special Olympics. I mean, unless he put it in there, and I doubt that he actually explicitly would say something like that. So in a way, he could be completely off hands of it. I mean, I just wouldn't want to make that allegation unless there's absolutely evidence that indicates that he did it. You know, I'm not arguing with you that it happened. I take your word for it. But you know, we don't know what how it actually came about. I don't think so.
Karen.
Well, you know, I just think that if my son made $700,000 from the Special Olympics, I would have known about it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The subject is Ted Stevens, Senator Ted Stevens, and what he's meant to Alaska on Talk of Alaska, plenty of opinions coming out here. Let's go to Dorothy, who joins the program from Anchorage. Dorothy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. I agree. Ted Stevens has done a great deal for our state. He has our state has progressed a great deal, but I think that both he and Representative Young have shown great disdain for the state recently in terms of how they campaign and how they face their opponents in each election. And I think the disdain of thinking that if these financial things are true and things that they've gotten so complacent that they think that no one will touch them, and which argues more for citizen legislators rather than people who have a career and don't live in their state and get out of touch with what the average Alaskan is actually doing.
It's interesting that you phrase it that way. This is Michael Carey. It's sort of like we have the expectation that the ideal senator, I think, would be elected at the minimum age and one day over, would have perfect genes and live to be 120 years old, and somewhere in there would get on the Appropriations Committee and get out the shovel and start shoveling money. Historically, Congress, there's a long period of time where it didn't have this kind of money to bring to its constituents. Bob La Follette, as a young man, when he went to the United States Senate or in the Congress of the United States in the 1890s, said most of his time was spent on one thing, and that was Civil War pensions for Northern veterans. The federal government didn't spend a lot of money on other things. And so Don Young, Ted Stevens, and the others have come into an era when there's a tremendous amount of money, of federal money, that's available for all kinds of things. Even in the 30s or the 20s, what a Congress senator could do for his state in the way that we know now was very much more limited than it is today.
Yeah, and, you know, to echo that, Michael, you know, I've seen it said that before particularly before the New Deal, say before the 1930s, the average American town, the only contact the person in a small American town would have with the federal government was the post office. That was it.
Yeah.
The post office was the biggest domestic expenditure. And so Michael's absolutely right. I mean, in the long-term historical perspective, this is a product, maybe a little bit of the New Deal, but mostly World War II, which is,
right.
You know, Alaska as a state is a product of World War II, and the massive federal bureaucracy is a result of the Second World War. So, I don't know, we have a sort of romanticized idea of a citizen legislator, but it's pretty difficult to think that in this day and age that would work, because the term limits were very popular with the Republicans when they thought the Democrats would never get out of office back in the 90s, and then the Republicans stopped talking about term limits once that they took over. So
yeah. Well, Michael's observation is so acute. I think all Western states tend to value seniority in their politicians for really good reason, because otherwise they wouldn't get much of anything.
Yeah, one thing that I've come to sympathize with Don Young on is, to my surprise, is being the only member of the Alaska Congressional Delegation. This cannot be easy, and I think it would affect the behavior of anybody who is in there. But going back to our previous caller, one of the things that she made me think of is this. In 1980, Don Young, Ted Stevens, and Frank Murkowski began a fantastic run as the Alaska delegation, 22 years. Now we're in 2008. Frank Murkowski was the most unpopular governor in Alaska's history, at least in my memory. I think maybe there'd be somebody else who would argue that, but the proof is in the election returns. He got 19% when he ran for re-election in the primary. Don Young is under investigation, and there's a good chance he's about to lose an election. He's very unpopular. And Ted Stevens is facing a federal trial. These people were given unlimited opportunity and great power, and this is where we wound up.
Let's try for some more calls. Lime Ford and nobody there? Okay. Well, then let's go to William, who joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, William.
Good morning. You were talking about Ted Stevens not wanting to enrich himself. Perhaps you could discuss his relationship with Michael Rabini, his real estate investment with Rabini, and with regard to his son, Ben Stevens, who was the head of the Fisheries Marketing Board, which received approximately $30 million in an earmark. His son, in turn, there was receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from the beneficiaries of the marketing board.
Right. Yeah, we don't.
3 years ago, Stevens had a press conference in which he was asked about that. And he said he had the memos of his fisheries aide, Matt Paxton, which showed that he didn't even know his son was on that marketing board. That's pretty amazing. Do you think that there's a connection between all these earmarks and his friends benefiting from them and his son benefiting from them?
Well, I mean, it's a lot longer list than that. And
right.
We still have three grand juries operating. And there's the question of, like, Sea Life Center. There's the question of Vehicle Incorporated getting National Science Foundation logistical support contracts. There are many of these things, and some of them we know grand jurors are looking at. And certainly that fisheries marketing thing is right at the top of the list. It's just that we don't know how those stories are coming out.
Yeah, what about his enriching himself there from his real estate investment with Michael Rabini, who just happened to receive hundreds of millions of dollars in federal contracts?
Well, yeah, I'm not real sure about that because I don't see it in his net worth that he ended up making out that well from it. But I'm just totally not. I'm not all that well conversant with it.
Well, perhaps one of the investigative reporters who did address it could refresh your memory as to how much he benefited from it. It's on the order of the wife of the futures in investment of former first lady's amazing abilities to pick a futures investment. A friend. Who was responsible for it. I would direct your attention there to how much money he made there from his investment there with the Rabini.
Let somebody else talk about
our corrupt senator.
John Rabini is the real estate developer he's referring to. The Daily News wrote about that, and Chuck Neubauer, the L.A. Times, is a friend of mine, wrote about that. And there were questions raised at the time. I'm sure Ted Stevens wouldn't like this way of approaching it, but there was an old Irish politician in New York City named George Washington Plunkett, who made the distinction between legal graft and illegal graft. He was very much in favor of legal graft and not in favor of illegal graft. He used to say, as other politicians have said, who are you gonna help out? Your friends. You're not going to help out your enemies. And, you know, this gets us back to that famous phrase, I broke no Virginia law. And Stevens, over the years, has been involved with many people, and his point of view is, I was just trying to do what's good for Alaska. There are going to be many people who, his critics, are definitely not going to see it that way.
1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Terrence, we'll be right back to you as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 25 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8400.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
40 years of Ted Stevens. Think of it. We've had 40 years of Ted Stevens. And this chapter, for whatever it's worth, has not necessarily come to a close, but it's going to a major hinge point, a big change, and that's what we're talking about today on Talk of Alaska. Terrence Cole, history professor, University of Alaska Fairbanks, you have the floor.
Well, I was going to say, Steve, one thing that gentleman, William, calling, you know, I think that the idea that we ought to take like 50 giant steps backwards, because from a national perspective, it could be alleged that every single person in Alaska has personally benefited from Ted Stevens. Now, you know, the whole complaint of John McCain about earmarks or the bridge to nowhere syndrome, you know, you can't get up in the morning and go to work or go to the doctor or go to the airport. The average Alaskan does in the course of the day, it's been impacted by Ted Stevens in one way or another. And from ports and roads and communications facilities, you name it. So I think that in such a small state, with a man with such great power, I think the emphasis on the fact that he is a crook and corrupt politician is completely dead wrong. Now, and I would admit that many of the contacts look questionable. For instance, having Vico remodel his house—that was a really bad idea. And obviously looks really bad to the prosecutors. But to say that the fact his primary goal has been to personally enrich himself, I think is complete nonsense. And that in this bigger way, why don't all Alaskans point the fingers at themselves and say, why don't they turn down the money for the new library, say, or the furniture in the library and the HUD grant or the computer that the university got, or the road that they drive on, or the sports center, whatever the list of things that they've quote unquote personally benefited from. I just say, sir, one thing. I know this isn't necessarily Ted's responsibility to fund New York, but if you go to New York City, you can't take public transit to LaGuardia Airport, and you take public transit to JFK, which is like a third world airport, and you know, goodness sakes, you know, what is our national spending priorities? But that's not the fault of the congressional delegation from Alaska. They're just playing with the game that we've inherited these 200 plus years. So I just think that Alaskans, in a way, that the focus is on the wrong thing. Alaskans have personally benefited from virtually everything that Ted Stevens has done.
Yeah, you know, we're the era has changed. And we'll see it. We saw it because we can't just have Bob Penny, bring up all these influential politicians from Washington, D.C. to go fishing anymore. They don't dare take the money anymore. It's a whole new era. In the Senate, you know, I've watched them operate in the Senate. They can be totally isolated from reality in there and only deal with who they want to deal with. And that is not conducive to a good democratic process. And that's what we've been dealt. That's the card we've been dealt. And that is the culture that Ted Stevens has been operating in. And that is changing. It is changing.
But, Steve, remember this, too, and I'll shut up and let Michael and the callers talk. But remember that the U.S. Senate is not a democratic institution.
No.
I mean, it was designed particularly not to be democratic. It's designed to be insulated from the people.
Yeah, it's constitutionally. It's constitutionally required under federalism that states have equal representation.
Well, and which the equal representation, of course, is grossly unequal.
Yes,
we are so overrepresented in the United States Senate, which is a reason why there was one crank congressman from New York who wanted to change the Constitution rather than let Alaska. And he said, you know, geez, he was talking about the overrepresentation of Alaska. Well, the Ted Stevens, or the average Alaskan, has, you know, it's at least 50 times the overrepresentation of the average Californian when it comes to their senator. So one thing is that's the difficult thing, that we've had a senator who's the longest serving Republican senator in American history. Not just currently, in American history, from this little state that relies so heavily on federal spending. I mean, it's relies so heavily on federal spending that most Alaskans have no idea that their job could be related indirectly to what Ted Stevens does. Many of these people who are loudly shouting corruption and a crooked deal, they've also benefited from the fact of his power and clout. So I think the idea of saying that it's just this sort of venal and corrupt thing, that kind of misses the complexities of the story, and it's not really fair to him. So,
Terrence, you've run out the clock.
Okay, I'm sorry.
let's try to get Robert in for one last shot here from Anchorage. Robert, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, here comes your liberal shot of the day. Ted would be, if he's found guilty, he would be only the second senator in the history of the country to be impeached if they decide to impeach him. And that was, the last one was, I think, in 1797, Congressman, or yeah. Senator Blount. So I think that what you've totally ignored, a lot of your callers have been, that there could have been another senator that was doing just as much, if not more, for Alaska during part of that 40 years. You totally blown that aside and saying that, oh, everything that's, you know, that we get is because of Ted Stevens. That is, nothing could be further from the truth.
All right. Thank you very much. Michael Carey, you got a last thought here?
No, it's been a pleasure to be here and participate. Thank you.
Thank you, callers. Civility note was very good. Terrence Cole, UAF, glad to have you back.
Thanks, Steve.
Next week, another Irishman, Mike Dugan, as a mystery writer this time. Gooseberry Peter on the controls, Emily Butler on the phones, Duncan Moon's our managing editor. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.